Thank you. And quickly, because I work, you know, with Marie on that project, and just this last week, it wasn't in the presentation, but we learned about women who are picked up, and they drive them to another town just for the weekend, and they put them in various hotels so it doesn't look like anything, and they leave them for the weekend, and they work for the weekend, and there's no... I just found out that was a very interesting one. I haven't really heard that in the literature much, so I just want to briefly mention it. So, and I think our presentations go really well together because they're really looking at, even though we're just starting in that area, they're really looking at the ways in which these sexual networks, these sexual practices, as well as potentially identities in terms of gender and sexuality and sexual behaviors really are impacted by, you know, the immigration process. And I should note that Baltimore's... growth, as Maria mentioned, these are new immigrants. Most of the immigrants that we are receiving are very new to the United States, so they have not been here a long time. They're coming partly, very rapidly to Baltimore because we are a sanctuary city. Our mayor has been very vocal of welcoming undocumented immigrants, and we have very strict policies of what our police can and cannot do. We'll see what happens with our state because it's just become dominated by Republicans. So we'll see. And so quickly, I want to mention the Latino Outreach Program. This was established by the Baltimore City Health Department in 2008. Our mentor is Dr. Kathleen Page, and she sees... people in both the Baltimore Health Department Clinic as well as the Johns Hopkins Moore Clinic, and she is a Latina, and so everyone gets given, you know, sent to her because she speaks Spanish. And she was just seeing this rapid influx of people coming in. The average CD4 count when individuals come in, Latinos, is 60, which is extremely low, clearly. And 50% of them are coming in with opportunistic infections, very, very sick. And so she was able to use current Ryan White funding to start this program, hire Latina outreach workers, all immigrants themselves, to really go out into the community. And first, they didn't do anything with HIV. They just went into the community, built partnerships, built trust, and then started doing testing and outreach testing. They've been very successful in linkage to care. However, they do a lot of tests. We're seeing people, you know, now increasingly have been tested before. Originally, when they first started, only 40% had ever been tested. And so we do see these great successes. It's really addressing the structural barriers to care. They're in the community. They're testing there. They've got follow-up with these outreach workers. But the shortcomings have been that most of the HIV diagnoses in Baltimore amongst Latino immigrants are still coming through the ER. They're still coming in extremely sick, so they're not catching it. And so there's still this high-risk group, or vulnerable group, if you will, that are not reaching out to these services, are denying tests, you know, not wanting to get tested. And then, two, we see very low participation with men who are engaging in sex with other men. And part of this is probably very much they're not, you know, disclosing this information. They don't see themselves, you know, necessarily as homosexual, and so either there's that disconnect or they just don't report it. But yet, again, when the individuals come in to the clinic through the ER very sick, a lot of times they do present with anal STIs. This is some of the, so our research is something that we just kind of wanted to explore a little bit, to kind of explore perceptions of masculinity and same-sex behaviors among heterosexual identifying Latino immigrant men, kind of broadly, and to use this to inform the Latino Outreach Program and everything we do around Latino immigrant HIV work is all with the Latino Outreach Program. It's really the only big program in Baltimore that's addressing this population, and so everything we do is to kind of work with them to improve and inform the services. And so this research was done through focus groups, and we decided first, because there is so much stigma and people don't disclose, we wanted to get more about perceptions. We know perceptions are very important in behaviors, and so we wanted to get perceptions. So we recruited at various day labor sites, because we've heard a lot about through our ethnographic work, a lot about same-sex behaviors kind of operating in this environment and with these individuals. And we did 8 focus groups with a total of 59 men. All of them identified as heterosexual. All of them had been in the United States for less than 10 years, most less than 5 years. And then we analyzed the transcripts through a modified constant comparison method or a modified grounded theory method. And these are the different pathways that we found. And I probably really shouldn't have put influence of new cultural exposures in a line. The dotted lines are kind of hypothesized, or not even hypothesized, really what we know about from the literature as well. And then, of course, the MSM for pleasure or preference, that happens. So it's connected here, but it also just happens, you know, of course. And so what we really saw in the way they talked about their perceptions, their understandings, and so on, was this kind of pathway. And so we see economic vulnerability and social vulnerability really leading to kind of these situations. And so they talked a lot, as was already discussed, about, you know, this psychological distress that they feel from marginalization and discrimination. And this also, in terms of why they're here in the United States, really had an impact on their ideas of masculinity. And finally, the psychological distress, they talked a lot about the alcohol influence same-sex behaviors. And then there's also the transactional same-sex behaviors. And I'm really going to kind of focus on those, because this is what the bulk of the discussion was. And so some of the economic vulnerabilities, if you work in Latino health, these are not necessarily new. Although I do want to say the violence issue was very extreme when we talked about it. Baltimore is not a very, you know, we have a lot of issues with crime, and they live in very, you know, low-income areas, and they are subject to a great amount of violence, partially because they carry cash, they're paid in cash, and it's known that, so they're walking ATMs, and then also just because of discrimination. There's a lot of issues within the African-American population in general, the lower-income African-American population, because there's a lot of competition for jobs, and they see the, you know, they say actually to us that the Latinos work much harder, you know, and so people want to hire them over us. And so this perception of being victimized is very important in the way they think about their economic opportunities. And so this really, you know, one of the things that I found very interesting is when talking about what it means to kind of be a man, they didn't report on some of the things that we see in other places. Their focus was actually really on providing for their family. We didn't really hear much, I mean, a little bit about having a lot of sex partners, you know, different things that often we hear, but it was really about providing for their family, no matter what. You know, so under any circumstances you provide but for your family, that's why you're here, and that's what makes you a man, regardless of how it impacts you here in the United States. And so one of these things that came out a lot was the fact that there was a lot of solicitation for transactional sex at the work sites, at the day labor open markets. And this usually came, you know, a truck would come, grab men for a construction site, leave, and then come back maybe an hour later and say, oh, we need another guy to do this. And then they go off in the truck, and it turns out the job is, you know, they want sex. And you know, some men take it, some don't. Because we weren't talking to people who actually engage in this, or we didn't ask, you know, some of them might have, but we weren't talking about personal experiences. We were talking more about perceptions and what they've heard and experienced. You know, we didn't get into that in terms of what happens. So we don't know necessarily how that happens other than what they said they've heard. So maybe it was their expenses, maybe it was what they've heard. We can't really speak on actual behavior. But there really was this understanding that this was just a normal, everyday behavior. They didn't talk about it in the same way that they talked about other forms of same-sex behavior. There was still ideas of homophobia, joking, and when talking about other things such as the, you know, same-sex behavior for pleasure, same-sex behavior because you're really drunk, or as they say, you know, drank into oblivion, which is a common term. There really wasn't that same kind of perception. This was much more norm, and almost a third had been approached themselves. We did not ask if they accepted, but they've been approached. And again, like this it wasn't viewed the same because it really aids in providing for your family. So again, this is an opportunity to be a man, even though it kind of goes against some other cultural norms. And so one of the quotes that I have here, you know, it says, there are many Latinos that I know who have done this, right? A Mexican recently told me of his experience. The employer said, if you sleep with me, I will give you $100. The Mexican said, I have no money to send home. I had no money to send home. What was I supposed to do? And he did it. And so sometimes it is by necessity, and it is up to each person. And so again, just to stress, this was seen as very differently as other forms of same-sex behaviors. This was something that people knew. It was discussed. You know, not always, but there was a little bit of discussion about it, and it really was not the same thing. And again, it has to do with that, you know, changes in ideas of masculinity and what it means to be a man in this context. And so, just in conclusion, you know, there does seem to be, you know, becoming this normalized kind of behavior, which, and when you think about perceptions per se, you know, that can really influence what people do. Because if they start, you know, perceiving this as a normalized behavior, they might actually engage themselves. And so, you know, perceptions, a lot of times when we talk about this, we get a lot of flack for not doing interviews. Like, well, we should have done interviews. And the thing that I try to say is, one, people right now are not going to talk to us about their individual behaviors. So that would kind of be very difficult. But then, two, you know, perceptions are very, very important in our health behavior choices. And in Baltimore, you know, we have one of the highest rates of HIV. We're always in the top, you know, in terms of HIV. And right now, the Latino population, even though we're increasing, or not we, but Latino population is increasing in terms of HIV and AIDS, it's still pretty low, particularly for our city, where we have such major issues, predominantly around African-Americans and, you know, even more so African-Americans who engage in, you know, same-sex behaviors. And so right now, it's a very close community, and it's very insular, and most of sex partners are within that same community. But this is an opportunity, as well as the female sex work, where we see bridging. And one of the things that we're really trying to do with the Latino outreach population is we know that if that comes into a, you know, into the network where you have a core transmitter, if you guys are familiar, you know, with that kind of idea and the research that's been done there, if this comes into a core transmitter, it could actually spread very fast. And that's kind of what we're trying to do is, you know, if it comes in, preventing it from spread really fast. And so this idea of bridging is a really important issue that we need to consider. And so future research is really needed to understand actual behaviors as well as the social networks in which this bridging is occurring and could potentially spread. So thank you. And again, some of the research team has been very, very involved with this. And I hope I didn't speak too fast, but happy to take questions.